Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends. You're listening to Fast Forward Radio on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist. You can find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we are all about a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities, which are at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, and it will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm also doing great. Except for the fact I just launched the chat room, which is something I always do, several minutes before the show. My apologies to our live chatters. Feel free to join the chat room now. It is just
chat room's open. Come on in. You know, don't be shy.
The water's fine.
We're open for business. And here they come. Dusty is getting the ball rolling. All right. This would be a great show, wouldn't it? We'll just monitor the chat room. I'll just describe everything that happens in it as the show goes forward.
That would sort of be on tone with the topic anyway. We're talking about instant everything is what we're talking about.
Instant everything. We live in the world of instant feedback. We live in a world of instant gratification. Some would say we live in a world where our expectations are increasingly that things take less time than they used to, or no time at all, if possible. And we're going to explore that a little bit this evening. I've come up with a few examples that I just kind of pulled. It was a topic that I've been sort of noodling with over the past couple of weeks. I almost wrote a big long blog post about it over the holidays, but I didn't have the ambition, I guess, to get that put together. So in a sense, we've got kind of a delayed discussion on all things instant, which is part of the interesting paradox of things happening instantly, because sometimes things happen instantly because it seems that the world is happening instantly, and sometimes they happen instantly because everything has built up to that over a very long period of time. And we'll get into that distinction too as we go. But you know, as we were talking right before we went live, you had just been reading, I guess, a book that speaks to this topic.
Absolutely. This book was published yesterday, and the title of the book is All Things Shining by Hubert Dreyfus. And basically, in this book, he spends a lot of time going back to, you know, classics of Western literature and pulling them out and applying them to our instant gratification kind of world. And, in a secular kind of way, he is looking for, you know, a spiritual reawakening of, you know, he sets himself some high goals in this book. And so I thought, hey, this is worth looking at. And there in the first chapter, I go, oh, man, you know, here he goes. And so he writes something with which there is, I don't know if you can say it's right or wrong, but at any rate, see what you think about it, Phil.
So just to set it up again, the book is called All Things Shining?
All Things Shining by Hubert Dreyfus.
And the author is?
Hubert Dreyfus.
Hubert Dreyfus, All Things Shining. Okay, take it away.
When one discovers the world of blogs, for example, one feels, finally, as though one can be up to the minute with respect to every breaking event on the current scene. If one falls into the grip of these kinds of obsessions, one finds oneself constantly craving the newest, latest post, wondering what the most recent crisis or observation or tidbit could be. The craving for something new is constant and unceasing, and the latest post only serves to make you desire more. Completing that fails entirely to satisfy the craving that sets you on your way. You are addicted.
Hmm.
And so, anyway, my thought there, I kind of wrote a marginal note, as you can do with Kindle books. I said, the house of the rising speculist. It's been the ruin of many a poor boy, and God, I know I'm one. So,
you're
anyway.
Definitely one, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I'd have to be one. I'd have to be one, too. Well, I think that is wrong. I think that's wrong on several counts. I think I understand where he's going and what he's getting at. And certainly anyone who suffers from the delusion that they can stay on top of everything is that is a delusion. There is no staying on top of everything. And it's true that there is a tremendous addiction associated with following sites, especially sites that are frequently updated. To that extent, the speculist is less addictive probably than a lot of sites because we don't just pound it out. People are probably more hooked on your Twitter feed, frankly, Stephen, than they are on the speculist, just because right, because you don't get that just regular fix. This is how people get hooked on Facebook, because somebody they know is always putting something up there. So there's always something appearing. So I can at least understand kind of the psychological phenomenon that he's talking about there around people getting addicted to doing things on the web. But I don't think that that's the heart of blogging, and I don't think that's really the thrust of why most people access information via the internet. I think the reason they access most information via the internet is a much simpler reason. It's because that's where the information is.
Right.
You know, people want to be informed, and they go there to become informed. If you put all the dynamics of, you know, potential addiction and the social stuff that goes on, which, you know, I'm not going to deny that there is a certain aspect of that. I think that that people read the internet today the way they read newspapers 50 years ago, because it was the fastest way to get info. The way they watched TV news 25 years ago, because it was the fastest way to get information. And when you want information, you want it as quickly as you can get it.
Well, yeah. There is a kind of a response in a way, if you want to look at it this way. You know, the book I sent you Christmas time, Phil, I Live in the Future, and Here's How It Works.
Right, okay.
Nick Bilton wrote that book, and he points out several times, I mean, kind of one of his themes, especially in the first part of the book, was that, you know, we don't read everything. What we tend to consume on the internet is vetted by trusted friends and social networks.
Right.
Put it to you this way, you, Phil, carry more weight in my reading decisions than the New York Times.
Well, I should hope.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, name any major news source. I'm probably missing 99% of what's said, but somebody, you know, in my circle on the internet, and that's, you know, it might be Facebook, it might be, you know, blogs that I follow, things like that. Or even Twitter feeds, that I follow, is, you know, we'll pull things out and say, you know, here's something interesting, and that's what I end up reading, and they might be pointing me right back to the New York Times, but those decisions are made. What I read is, you know, you only have a certain amount of time during the day to read like that, and so you want to read things that you're interested in. And basically, the way to do that is to follow people that are interested in the same things, and they, you know, and we point out things to one another.
Well, I know, for example, our friend Glenn Reynolds, Instapundit, he is always warning his readers not to let him be the only source of news that they have. You know, he will mention that periodically. If you're only getting your news from me, don't do that. Right? Go to other sources as well. But I would say that better Instapundit than a lot of places, because you get a pretty good summary. I mean, you get an awful lot of stuff on there, and I think I don't know how he does it. I have no idea how he, you know, a lot of the news must find him, but because people send him stuff. But, you know, it would be really hard to go find all the stuff. Or you think back when Drudge was a one-man outfit, and
exactly.
he was posting all that content before there was Google to go find stuff, right? I mean, he was getting it from, like, phone conversations and emails and, you know, clandestine meetings and things like that. It's really vital that you have these kind of aggregators, these kind of trusted filters, people who are putting collections of information together for you that that you can then access in more or less real time and get the info or some subset of the info that you're looking for. Although I agree, you can't get everything from Instapundit. I'm always surprised when I see a big news story and I think, well, Glenn didn't even mention it. But of course he didn't mention every single thing that happens, right? I mean, he has compared it to
he is
being,
not a utility. He is a
right. He's compared it to being a DJ. Right, and he's trying to figure out what to spin next, what's gonna add to the mix and make for a nice flow through the day. He's not a public servant. He's not out there, giving all the news that's fit to print. He's giving all the news that his readers might be interested in reading that he decided he would link to, pretty much.
Indeed.
But it gives you this snapshot of the world, and you get this information in real time in a way that it just wasn't available before. And we see so many things happening at that speed. And so in the description of the show, I gave a bunch of examples of the kinds of things that happen instantly that we didn't used to see. In those kinds of time frames. So I'm going to go ahead and confess that we're going to use the term instant in some cases this evening to mean instant, and in some cases to mean much, much faster than traditionally. So for our purposes tonight, instant will include both of those meanings, if that's acceptable to you, Stephen.
Well, yeah, and the audience can kind of, pick and choose which we're talking about as we're going through, I guess, so.
Yeah, and I just wanted to note, we were kind of heavy discussing things, but the chat room kind of turned into a little 12-step meeting there about people admitting to their internet addiction there for a bit. So,
yeah, that's pretty sad when the meeting place for your 12-step program for internet addiction is on the internet.
You're right. The perfect place when you think of it. It's the perfect place. And, gang, I just want you all to know we're here for you, okay? We are here for you.
Yeah.
And we're going to continue to feed your addiction throughout the course of the evening. So I'll just run through a few of these, and I've got some examples. Stephen, if you've got some examples, and we'll just kind of see where we go with this. My first example, this is a huge news story that has emerged from the internet almost overnight. And actually, before I get to this one, I do have the example of a similar one from, I guess, about a year and a half ago. You know who I'm talking about when I use the name Susan Boyle.
Yes, yes, yes.
So she was nobody who auditioned for a program called Britain's Got Talent, did very well on Britain's Got Talent, as a matter of fact, but became an international superstar because the YouTube of her audition went viral. And she is now one of the top-selling artists in all the recording industry. I was actually given her Christmas album as a Christmas gift, and I feel that
absolutely
that was
beautiful voice. That's
the great thing about that video is you watch these Britain's Got Talent hosts, very similar to American Idol kind of setup, clearly not expecting anything like that level of talent. When she starts singing, I mean, she gets up there and she introduces herself, and she's this very frumpy looking 48-year-old British lady who seems to have led a pretty sheltered and quiet life, describes herself as having never been kissed, and you just to look at her, you don't think great things are coming out of this woman's mouth, and then she starts to sing and it's just astounding. And it caught hold of the attention, obviously, of everyone who was watching the audition, and not only that, the video then went viral and turned her into this international superstar. And it happened in a fairly short period of time, about a year after the time when no one had ever heard of her. Suddenly she's got, she's topping the charts consistently. And in fact, her whole career kind of happened instant, because I think she not only became huge, she then ended up in rehab, and now she's out of rehab, and she's had her comeback. And it's, you know, it's all been in the same period of, right. It's all been in about a year and a half, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's the kind of arc people used to spend 20 years on, that kind of an arc, right? And,
yeah, I mean, she got a reunion tour already, you know?
Exactly. It's not just instant success. It's like instant career, you know? I mean, the whole thing. I was reminded of her with this story that is circulating fast and furious even now. It's huge right now on YouTube. And this is the story of a panhandler, a homeless panhandler, who is at the intersection of a interstate and a street in, I think it was Columbus, Ohio, stands there asking for change, holding a sign. This is, I don't know if in... if in your town, Stephen, that's a big phenomenon, but we have this in Denver. I mean, there's intersections where you know that there's going to be someone there. They're going to have a sign. It usually says homeless. It usually says veteran. You know, let's say I'm trying to get a job. You know, give me a hand, whatever. This guy's sign said something very different. His sign said, "I've got this God-given voice. I'd like to share it. I'd really like to get my voice out there." And that has gotten the attention of people as they've driven past. Finally, someone decided to, I think a news crew got word of it and decided to videotape this gentleman and capture his voice on audio. That has gone viral on YouTube. And, Stephen, I think we've got an audio clip.
There are often homeless people asking for change at freeway exit ramps. But recently, there's been this guy with an interesting sign at I-71 and Hudson Street. His handwritten sign says he has the God-given gift of a great voice.
Hey, I'm going to make you work for your dollar. Say something with that great radio voice.
When you're listening to nothing but the best of oldies, you're listening to Magic 98.9. Thank you so much. God bless you. Thank you. And we'll be back with more right after these words. And don't forget, tomorrow morning is your chance to win a pair of tickets to see this man live in concert.
Okay.
Awesome.
Now, the cool thing about this, Phil, is, I mean, you hear that and you say, well, that's great. But you got to see the guy. You can't just hear it on the fast forward radio and really get a full understanding. So I put the link in the chat room. I hope guys will click through and just get a look at this guy, because you just would, you know, like. The lady that Susan Boyle, you just don't expect that voice to come out of that person. And,
you do not expect that voice to come out of that individual. That's absolutely for sure. I mean, I picture something very different. Well, when I hear that voice, I picture a very stereotypical disc jockey from the 70s, maybe early 80s. You can see the guy sitting there in his blazer, maybe with a turtleneck on, something like that, and just laying out that kind of, just that kind of spiel. And this man does not look like that. He does not live up to that stereotype at all. It is quite startling. Here's the beautiful thing about this story. This YouTube goes viral, and apparently the offers have started pouring in, to the extent that he has decided, I think very wisely, to sit back and think for a moment before he decides what he's going to do. He's been offered an announcer job with a major sports franchise. Apparently NFL Films has expressed some interest, and other media outlets and other agencies that do voiceover work have all approached him and said, we think we might have some work for you. So this very unassuming man, very obviously a nice guy who was trying to improve his circumstances, found a way to do so, a tremendously successful way to do so, just by, really what he did was he stood on an intersection with a sign, and the rest of it just sort of happened. But that is a formula for success within a time frame that's virtually unheard of. Nobody skyrockets to a career in media that quickly, but it looks like this guy might do exactly that.
And I wish him the very best. It's just a good story.
it just makes you feel good. It's just a good story all the way around. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I mean, there's no bad guy in this story. This is just all good.
Exactly. So. It's all good. The NFL Films thing made me think that I wish I knew his name, but I don't know his name. I've heard it before. But since we lost a couple of years ago, the definitive voiceover artist for movie trailers, I'm starting to think this guy might have a shot at that. You know, they say it again.
In a world.
I didn't want to talk over you. That's exactly it. Maybe. In fact, I don't know, Stephen, have you thought about doing it? You know.
I would love that job. I would absolutely love that job. You get to see, you know, the trailers before anybody else because you've got to do the voiceover for it. So,
pros and
I would
cons,
enjoy that.
I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's my example of instant success. Did you have one that you wanted to share, or do we move on to the next category?
Well, you know, I think something we ought to cover right now is this. Well, you keep saying the word viral, and there are instant cliches out there that we have. I have a list of. This is from the Huffington Post, and they have a list of words that they think ought to be banished in 2011. And the first word is viral. What do you think, Bill? I mean, is the word viral overdone?
Well, you're talking to a marketing guy, okay? So, you know, don't try to take viral away from me. I totally need that word. Actually, I have to say, I see where they're coming from because these terms can be really annoying. And give some of the other examples.
Well, let's see. Now, but by the way, I'm with you on viral. Viral is too useful. It's sort of like the word okay. You know, okay is so useful that it's been adopted worldwide. You know, you can go to China and people are saying okay to each other, you know.
Right, right.
It's just it's such a useful thing that it's beyond the criticism of being overdone. A viral is very descriptive. It's exactly what happens when something goes viral. I can't even think of another word for it. We need the word viral.
Yeah, you know, something catches on. I mean, there are actually no synonym phrases for that capture the idea quite as well as viral does. But what were some of the others?
Okay, the next one listed here is epic, and I think that may be a little bit overdone. It's a little like the word awesome. I say awesome too much, I've been told. So you know, and I was thinking about moving to epic instead of awesome, but now
what are you saying? You say awesome too much?
Yeah. So I've been told
Steven,
that.
You know what? Fail, okay? That's all I have to say.
That's the next word. After epic, they're saying the next word that should be just, you know, removed from our vocabulary in the year 2011 is fail. And I guess when you put the two together, epic, fail, you know, that's even worse. So, you know, you can't. And, you know, what's funny is that this is an example of a verb that's been turned into a noun. Fail, yes.
You're right.
You
it
know,
could be failure, but it's not. It's a fail. You're right.
Yeah, it's a fail. It's a noun. You know, and now, you know, we used to fail, which was a verb. Now it's a fail, you know. So
exactly, yes.
And so this is an example. And, you know, normally you hear about things that are nouns becoming verbs. This is the exact opposite. I think for that reason it's interesting. We keep it. And so that's...
Well,
that's
in fact, we've got a terrific comment in the chat room from HB Clinic. Now you sound like my 15-year-old son, and I think that's what's going on here. My 22-year-old daughter introduced me to. Are you familiar with a YouTube show called? I think it's called Epic Fail or Cute.
Well, there's like a Fail blog or something like that.
And fail blog is funny, yeah. With
it's very funny.
Things going horribly, parking fail and that sort of thing. Epic fail or cute, and it's this young guy and he takes it's kind of like America's Funniest Home Videos. Okay, he just scours YouTube, or probably people send him stuff, and he gives you a couple of clips every week. This is epic. This is a fail. And this is cute. And it is a hugely popular program. I think it appeals to a certain demographic, and I think that the demographic it appeals to has not been alive on the planet as long as I have. Probably not as long as you have either, Stephen. So I get the feeling that the folk, the guy at Huffington Post who wrote that, and most of the people who contributed to that collection, maybe they're maybe those terms, you know, sound a little jangle on the nerves a little bit to them because they're not quite part of that whole.
Yeah, they're old. Okay,
They're not cool. Okay, these people are not.
Yeah. The cool train, you know, chugged on down the line, leaving them behind. But anyway, you know, it reminds me when I was a kid, there was one of my best friend's sisters. I mean, she the entire world to her was classified as either cute or gross, and we just laughed. I mean, because I mean that was I mean everything in the world was one or the other, and it was sort of a limiting thing to her. You know, if it wasn't exactly cute or gross, she was just really thrown off. But anyway, okay, so
I love that Sally says in my day we used groovy. Hope I didn't date myself too much there. I love Groovy. We should push Groovy back, I think. Groovy, you know, Groovy needs to make a I think it needs to make a comeback. But that's definitely a word that fell out of vogue at some point.
Groovy is PG, no doubt.
In the 70s, 80s, whenever it was Simon and Garfunkel did one of their big live concerts in Central Park in New York. And they sang that song Feeling Groovy, which was one of their big hits back in the 60s, and now it's like it's a few years later. They kind of had to sing it ironically because,
exactly.
Right? Because by then people weren't using the term anymore. But
Phil Collins did a Groovy Kind of Love, and I think he did it completely sincerely.
There you go.
About 10
no,
years
a guy
ago,
named Phil can pull Groovy off. That's true.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right. Yeah.
If you're named Phil, you know, that it helps. So yeah, I think there are instant cliches. Definitely there is much quicker adoption of terminology than there used to be, and we have a lot of these kind of web neologisms, new words, new terms. And one of the most interesting ways that words get kind of reintroduced into the language is they change their part of speech. I was talking to some colleagues about this at work today about in business how we always use leverage as a verb. And of course, leverage is a noun originally.
Yeah.
Interface got used, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, people started using that as a verb, and it's a noun. And it happens the other way. Fail was a verb, and now it gets used as a noun.
You always know if something has arrived. A product has really, 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 you know, taken off in the public imagination when it starts being used as a verb. I guess probably the first one I can think of is probably Xerox, you know, when you go, I went and Xeroxed this document. That's when people started saying that, I mean, you know, Xerox is not even the biggest, photocopy company by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, people still say that, they laid claim to the verb early.
I still haven't heard anyone say, yeah, I went over on Bing and Googled it. Right? Also, what's the past tense of Bing? I bang? Or did I bing? I binged it.
Right? Yeah, binged it.
Google the verb. Bing is, you know, I don't think Bing's got a ways to go before it it takes Google on. But Facebook made friend into a verb, right? So it's same kind of idea.
Right,
so I used a harsh term here. I think instead of instant cliches, we should be talking about instant evolution of language. That's really what's happening here. And some of it's great and creative and interesting, and some of it's irritating. But that's also true.
We're just saying
most usage of language. So
the other example is I'm just saying. Is something they think should probably die
if I could throw out another one here, I am so over. I'm just saying, okay.
Exactly. whatever.
I am totally over that. I am so over whatever too. Okay. I think we're completely over this topic too. So let's.
Yeah, exactly. We've beaten this horse. But anyway.
Yeah, that's another good one. Okay, so we'll move on. Instant adoption of technology, and I was trying to think of a good example of this, and I thought Angry Birds would be a good example. Now, are you doing the Angry Birds yet, Stephen?
Oh yeah.
How long have you been doing Angry Birds?
Let's see. My brother brought it to my attention probably October. I would guess probably late October of last year, and okay. So it's not a big deal. When somebody says, "Hey, there's a great game and it's available on the iPhone," my thought is, well, if they liked it, I'll risk $2. That's the great thing about apps. They're so dirt cheap that I could be wrong on 5 apps and it'd still be okay as long as the 6th one is great. I've been doing Angry Birds.
You've been doing the Angry Birds, so you've been doing it since October, and I guess it's been around for about a year. It was introduced in December of 2009. Do you know off the top of your head how many people have downloaded Angry Birds?
Have no idea.
50 million people have downloaded Angry Birds across all platforms. I mean, it's on Droid and it's on everything, right? But
how many people are in the United States? I mean, I'm trying to get a grasp on how many people that is. That is huge.
That is a country, right? I mean, that's a whole country of people right there. They talk about Facebook is, 500 million, and it took them how many years to get there? I mean, when you sell a product to 50 million people, you've done something, you've accomplished something quite astounding. And when you do it in about a year, this, I guess, is where we're going to use very fast instead of instant. But I think the paradigm of adoption of technology, especially adoption of things like apps, games, fun things you can do on the computer. Particularly on the computer, because that's the environment that makes it so easy to do these kinds of things. I mean, to go from 0 to 50 million in a year is just absolutely astounding. And we're getting 300 million Americans in the chat room, so they're not all in the U.S., but a group of people equal to 1/6 of the population of the U.S., roughly.
Hey, have you seen that picture of this guy playing Angry Birds for real? Now, he's not really using birds. Okay, it's like stuffed birds that he's got a slingshot and he's shooting these stuffed pigs. It's cute. I just put a link in the chat room. Pretty funny.
Oh, okay. Is it a video or just a picture?
It's a picture. It's just a picture. Okay. Apparently, some arcade in China set this up. So it allows you to actually use a real slingshot with these birds and shoot pigs. So
very cool. Okay. Well, there you go. So
there's a new platform there.
Who's hurt in the game? Is it birds or pigs that are hurt? It's pigs. It's birds.
Yeah. You're trying to knock these pigs down with these angry birds.
How could an idea like that not be huge when you think about it?
Birds are attacking pigs, everywhere I look, Phil. I don't know where you've been.
I mean, that's the thing. There, for that one game, there have to be 1,000 equally implausible games that somebody thinks or thought, this is going to be a big hit app, right? And right,
and
it's
goes
not,
nowhere.
And that one is. It's the dynamics of that are fascinating, aren't they? What made Angry Birds this phenomenon? I mean, I look at Farmville and I ask the same question. I've not played Farmville, so maybe if I gave it a try, I would understand it better. But
no, you don't want to go there, man. I mean, I've seen good people disappear into that hole and never come out. So
and never come out. Yeah. Well,
there's addiction
there. Could the description of Farmville be any dorkier? I mean, truly, could a game sound like a bigger nerdy waste of time than you're virtually farming? Right? You're running for, you're going to put in your crops. It's like, it's like fantasy football, only instead of football, it's a farm.
Apparently, I don't know how this happened, but apparently I've got crops, Phil. And periodically, my Farmville playing friends see my untended crops, and they'll come by and like work my crops, and it pops up on my Facebook. I'm going, I've got crops. When did I do that? So, you know,
I didn't know I had any land.
When did this happen? You know,
yeah,
apparently,
wow.
Maybe one of my kids, you know, got on my Facebook and was playing Farmville. I don't know. But apparently I have crops, and they're untended, and so periodically my Farmville playing friends will take pity on it and like, water my crops and stuff, whatever. But I refuse. I'm just not going to get into that. But
Though.
If you love Farmville, that's more power to you. I'm not judging. I waste my time too. Just
no, I actually don't mean to judge the experience. I'm basing it solely on what I've been told about it. And
yeah.
To me, it's astounding that anyone was ever persuaded to do it based on what they were told about. Just that much. I mean, Angry Birds I would play because people say, oh, it's, you know, it's fun, it's cute, and there's
cute,
these birds.
Funny.
And they didn't actually say that it's, you know, slingshotting birds at pigs. which, once you get to that level of depth, it'd be like, oh, yeah, of course. That's what that huge, phenomenal game would be all about. But all that is to say that it's almost impossible to predict what's going to catch on like this and what is going to enjoy that kind of instant success. And the flip side of instant success, I think, is maybe not instant failure. It's more like instant obscurity. And that's what – well, there is instant failure. We were talking about this before the show, too. I was looking for good examples of instant failure. And
well,
we've actually had
the problem with instant failure, Phil, is that we don't know of any examples because they are obscure.
Well, most instant failures are obscure.
By definition.
So obscurity is probably a better
yeah.
definition. Big spectacular instant failures are fewer and far between, just because so few things actually get launched anymore. But as I was searching the term, the movie Jonah Hex was listed as an instant failure.
Yes.
Spent a lot of money, had big stars, and it went absolutely nowhere in the box office.
They spent a huge amount of money. Somewhere north of $100 million. And when you spend that kind of money on a film, you're hoping to make a little money, you know, it just went absolutely nowhere, you know, so, oh well.
It's interesting to think that maybe a nudge here or a nudge there, and it could have been this mega hit, right?
Right.
The other example I had was the TV show Lone Star, which was canceled after one episode last fall. This, you know, much touted, much hyped show about a con man, sounded really intriguing, sounded really interesting. One episode airs and it's off the air. Now, the reason that I don't tout that as being particularly indicative of the world we live in today is that I did a Wikipedia search on shows canceled after one season. That's been going on since like the 70s. I mean, not one season, one episode. They've got examples on Wikipedia of shows that were canceled before the first show ever shown ended. Okay, so like it's running, and the networks make the decision to cancel it, you know, like before the hour is up. Okay.
Well, you know what's funny to me is that apparently they're not watching their own shows before they put it on TV. You know, apparently you've got some guy that's like a network exec who's watching it along with the rest of the world and going, "Oh, this sucks." He makes the call and it's canceled. You know, why couldn't he have done that before he put it on TV? You know, at any rate.
You would think, yeah. You would. Well, he hasn't really seen it until he's seen other people react to it. I guess that's the key. He hasn't really seen it until he gets a phone call about it, right? And then suddenly he's looking at it very differently.
Hey, Thuris in the chat room gives us a lot of examples of the all-time great disasters in film. And
it's Star. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm.
They spent so much money on Ishtar. Yeah, that was in real dollars. I'm not sure that a comedy has ever cost more money than Ishtar.
Especially if you're looking at the, like, you know, dollar per laugh, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because it was supposed to be a comedy, and it just, you know, I've watched it. Have you sat through it?
No, I've never watched Ishtar. I felt sufficiently warned away. But you must be a big Dustin Hoffman fan, I'm guessing, is it?
Well, you know, there are movies that I think are pretty great. Watch Marathon Man always before going to the dentist. Makes me feel better about the experience.
Yes.
But, you know, I feel better about the experience in the dentist chair, you know, when I
go see Tootsie before applying for a job, right? That sort of thing.
exactly.
You know, or the graduate.
I'm just grateful I can dress as a man and still get a job.
Yeah.
Anyway, but, yeah, I watched that movie, and it's incredible. It's incredible that anybody thought that that would be great, you know, that we're going to spend all this money on it. You know, you got Warren Beatty and you got Dustin Hoffman together, and literally, you know, hours pass. It feels like 5 hours. It can't be that long, but it felt like it. And I literally, I mean, I said, I'm, you know, once I got, you know, well into the movie, I said, I am watching this thing. I'm going to get through this, and just so I can say I did. And I literally did not crack a smile. And, you know, not only was it not funny, it was not interesting. It was just bad, bad, bad. So you've been warned away again.
What is it? 25 years later, I feel sufficiently warned. I'm not going to watch. Ishtar. Matt notes that ABC was trying to get Lost canceled. It's been rumored, but they'd been overruled. I'd heard that NBC actually passed on Lost.
It was an expensive show. It wasn't being watched. It was everybody was watching it, but it was just a very expensive show to make.
They had to have made their money. We can make another reality show
and have half the viewers and make more money.
Yeah,
you know,
in Hawaii even. But.
Exactly.
So my next example of instant everything is instant expertise, and this is probably more like fast expertise than instant expertise. I've got a quick read I want to give you from Timothy Ferris's book, The 4-Hour Work Week. Tim Ferris is great. He's got his new book out, The 4-Hour Body. I've not read it yet. But I guess he hyped it and pushed it to number one on the New York Times bestseller list during the week that normally goes to the Guinness World Records, just so he could, like, have that feather in his cap. I don't know if you saw any of the web ads for the 4-Hour Body.
No.
He had this Christmas-themed ad. It said, "Eat like Santa, look like Jesus."
Okay.
I thought that was pretty good. Anyway,
I don't know if that's blasphemous or just fun.
Well, just you know, noting fat versus thin, I think it's okay.
Okay.
It has more endorsement.
That's true. Can you think of a single movie portraying Jesus as chubby?
No, I mean traditional religious art. He's always shown as being. You know,
he's in shape.
Thin.
He's walking. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. All right.
So the expert builder, how to become a top expert in 4 weeks, Ferris tells us. And he gives like this four-step outline to how to become an expert. And it's a real easy process. You join two or three related trade organizations. You read the three top-selling books. You check and see what have been the biggest books on this particular topic. You read through those and summarize each on one page, right? So you get your spiel down. You give one free 1 to 3 hour seminar at the closest well-known university. Then you take that show on the road to like the nearest branch office of IBM or some big company like that. Optionally, you can offer to write one or two articles for trade magazines, but that's a little bit of extra work. And then you join this thing called ProfNet, which is a website that tracks down experts to be quoted for press releases and news stories. And boom, you're an expert. And I love that process because I look at that and I go, you know, people will hear that and they'll think, well, there's something dishonest about that. But actually not, because, you know, there are no institutions offering credentials of expertise, right? He's not saying how to become a doctor. He's not saying how to achieve a certain credential. Expert is a completely subjective idea, and you can actually you can be recognized as an expert by going through a very quick process and become essentially an instant expert.
Yeah, it's unlike the Apple genius with the 100 IQ. We're talking, you know, these people really are in the limited field that they're holding themselves out. Probably they are experts. So, you know.
Yeah. You know, but you can get yourself on a sort of limited expert status just by going through a few quick steps. But say you want more than that. Say you want to truly achieve expertise in some field of knowledge, or you just want to you want to learn something that you hadn't learned before. You want to do something that you hadn't done before. And I think that we live in the age of instant expertise. I mean, truly, people being able to share what they know instantly, and because of that, people have access to that expertise in an instant way. I feel that if there is a modern-day equivalent to the Library of Alexandria, you know, this, like, great repository of all human knowledge, and I always mockingly refer to Wikipedia as that, but Wikipedia really isn't that. I think YouTube is it. I think YouTube is becoming this, like, universal university. I mean, if that's not too redundant of a phrase, it's becoming this place where you can go find anything just about out. I mean, not just learn facts, but learn how to do something. I put a post up Christmas week called Viva La Vida, and it was this kid playing Viva La Vida on the violin, and he's actually... it's a duet of himself and himself doing this. And the first thing I observed about this was that it's remarkable that this young man is able to share that piece of media with the whole world, because there was a time when for him to do that would have required just a huge amount of infrastructure. I mean, we've talked about this many times, all of which has been replaced. He's got a webcam, he's got his violin, he's got some software to edit videos. And he puts this, he puts this thing up. He edits the sound together himself, and you got this really wonderful video of this guy playing this Coldplay song on his violin. That's cool. But you say, oh wow, I wish I could play Viva La Vida on the violin. But that's highly specialized knowledge. Well, actually, if you do a YouTube search, and I posted the video up there, there's another one of the young woman with the violin going, here, let me show you how to play Viva La Vida on the
violin.
I mean,
yeah. That's awesome.
Just about anything you can imagine that you would like to know is becoming accessible instantly. That information is becoming accessible instantly, and I think the reason YouTube is such. Go ahead.
I was just saying, you sent also a link to a calculus video. Learn calculus by way of MIT. And it was a specific part of calculus within that one video. What was it, differential equations or something like that? And there was a comment that you thought was pretty great attached to that.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, in fact, if you go to that page where that MIT learn calculus the MIT way video is, yeah, the whole course is there, and dozens of courses from MIT and other places, lectures. On academic subjects are available. If you want to learn calculus, I'm not saying if you want to get a degree from MIT, but if you want to learn calculus the way MIT students do, it's there for you. You can learn it. And I love this comment that someone who obviously had viewed the videos wrote. He said, thanks, MIT. You are one of the free resources that helped me get a 5 on my AP calculus exam entirely through self-study. Free access to powerful learning tools is the way of the future. And obviously, it worked for this person.
Yeah, I hope 5 was on a scale of 1 to 5.
Yeah, I believe
1 to 100,
it is.
But yeah, I would say
I believe 5 is the top is the top ranking there.
Yeah.
So entirely through self study, this individual is able to ace the AP calculus exam.
You remember a couple of years back, Phil? I decided I need to learn how to. The Rubik's Cube. This is just ridiculous. Since childhood, I've had a fascination with the Rubik's Cube. Never have been around anyone who showed me. And in fact, I even had a couple of books on the subject. And a book on how to solve the Rubik's Cube was not getting it done. And this was like 2 or 3 years back. And YouTube was brand new, or relatively brand new. And
I have to tell, if any listeners who listen to all our programs, yes, you heard Stephen tell this story on an archive show very recently. So,
okay.
I'm just throwing that out.
Going over this again. But this is a while back. Anyway, so, you know, I got out there on YouTube, found a couple of different videos, and within, I would say, of just, you know, fooling with it for about 30 minutes to an hour, I was solving the Rubik's Cube and wowing other people. And, you know, oh, you must be brilliant. Well, yes, but you know, I'm just kidding. Anyway,
well, as I recall from the original telling of the story, the most important thing was wowing your sons, right?
Exactly.
Sure,
yeah,
that they understood that there was no technical thing in the world that Dad couldn't take on. And
yeah, exactly. The kids thought it was awesome, so I could solve the Rubik's Cube for them. And the thing is, if you have the patience to sit there and watch the video and learn, it's pretty simple algorithms that you have to just follow, and you can solve the Rubik's Cube. And so and that's just another example of pretty much anything that you're interested in learning. YouTube is a huge resource for that kind of thing. Khan Academy. You got this guy that's just got a whiteboard that's teaching kids, you know, all kinds of math, history, geography, with just a whiteboard, and that took off. It went viral when Bill Gates said that he uses it for homeschooling his kids.
Mm-hmm.
He uses Khan Academy, which is a free resource because, you know, Bill needs that. But
he wanted to save a few bucks, absolutely.
He needed to save a few dollars, and every, you know, when everybody heard that, they went and checked it out, and it's just brilliant in its simplicity. It's just a guy with a whiteboard talking through very simple problems, and then to the point that kids can pick it up. It's just real easy. So,
well, I think that's cool. The fact is that if you want to learn how to do something, or if there's information that you want to get your hands on, the access is instant. The expertise maybe takes some time. Yeah, you can do a shortcut like Timothy Ferris describes in his book. But the access to, you know, starting learning something is immediate. You don't have to wait until the library opens or until they get the book on interlibrary loan or until you're able to save up enough to send off for the course or in any of those kinds of things that many of us can, you know, well remember the time when that's how the world works. And I've got links here to, you know, how to tie a Windsor knot, how to speak Japanese, just about anything you can think of. And I think Rubik's Cube is a great example because when Rubik's Cube first became a fad back in, I guess that was the early, mid-80s, is that right?
I would say early 80s, yeah.
Early 80s. There was a slew of best-selling books on how to solve Rubik's Cube. But you had to wait, right? You had to go buy the book. Now it's like, oh, I've got this cube. I need to know how to solve it. Boom, right? Here's the answer. I can get the answer immediately. And I think that it's instant access to information above all is the difference. I mean, that's what we started with, and I think that's what we close with here. It is the difference between the world that we live in today and the world that humanity has ever lived in. This is truly one of the astounding transformations as we get ready for part two of the World Transform coming up here in a few weeks. This is one of the most profound changes that has occurred in our world. And I think, you know, this difference between if you hear about a movie, if someone tells you something about a movie and you decide you want to watch it, 25 years ago, what's the lag time between when you first hear about it and when you actually watch the movie?
There is a movie coming out. It's a Nicolas Cage movie, I believe, that's starting this Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And which something? I don't even know. I think I heard about it the very first time on Sunday night, you know,
mm-hmm.
Watching TV and on comes Matt. And it's, you know, it's obviously, it's a huge, you know, a huge movie. They spent
right.
a lot of money doing it. There's Nicolas Cage. What's the guy who did Hellboy? I forget his name. But he's in it.
Is that Ron Perlman? No.
Yeah, that's right. Ron Perlman.
Yeah, Ron Perlman. Yeah,
and and then there's I think there's also the what's the guy who played Dracula way back when and was in Lord of the Rings and Count Dooku, that guy. Christopher.
Oh, yeah. Frank Langella.
Christopher Lee. Yeah.
Oh, Christopher Lee. Excuse me. Frank Langella.
Yeah, Christopher
he
Lee
also played
in
Dracula, but was not in Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Anyway, And he is in this, you know, so it's big names, big, you know, obviously huge special effects. And I just heard about it for the first time this weekend. And I think maybe that is the way they're promoting movies now. I think that now they're just saying, well, there's no point in letting people know 2 months out, you know, that there's a movie coming out. We need to save our advertising budget and hit it right before the movie comes out, because things are happening too quick. You know,
I think that there's a lot of truth to that. I think that's true. But say a movie already existed and you just learned about it, its existence 25 years ago. What's the lag time between hearing about that movie, one that already is out, and when you get to see it?
Well, the lag time now, it might be 5 minutes if I can find it on Netflix. You know, so
exactly. You know, back then, if somebody tells you about a movie, wow, I'd really like to see that. Maybe I can go find, you know, 25 years ago, I guess I could have gotten a video cassette, maybe, somewhere of it, if it was out on video, and I could go to a store, buy it, or send off for it, buy it, something like that. I mean, there was a lag time. 10 years before that, if it wasn't going to be on TV, and it hadn't had a revival at the movies, you're out of luck. You could wait years before seeing a movie. you know, then years got shortened to days or weeks, and now it's absolutely instant gratification. There's a movie out about a month ago called Monsters, brand new science fiction movie, really interesting. I don't know if we've talked about it on the show. It's about alien invasion happening in Mexico and these people trying to flee from it. I read a review of it, and I was planning to take my older daughter, to see it at the movie theater. And was just browsing Amazon, and they had it on Instant Play, too. It was like a simultaneous release to cinemas and Amazon Instant Play. So it was like the first day I read a review of a brand-new movie showing in the theaters, I accessed it on my TV that night. Okay? It's like, you know, the window has been, you know, it's been shrunk to nothing. But you're right. It's, you know, if it's on Netflix, 5 minutes, 2 minutes, you know, 30 seconds, and you're watching the movie you want to watch.
You know, P.J. Manning's husband was the director of that cinema classic, Bitch Slap.
Bitch Slap,
and,
yes.
And I have seen it, and it basically, it was one of these deals where you could, I think I watched it on the PlayStation, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
It was available on that before I could get it on DVD, and so it was... that's just another example. You know, things are coming at us in a lot of different directions. You don't think maybe that the PlayStation is a movie machine, but it certainly is. And you can it'll even do Netflix without a disc now. It's just a Netflix machine.
Yeah, just like a Roku. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I know you had a book example you wanted to give, and before time is completely out, I want you to give it.
A book example.
You had an example of a book you downloaded really fast, or no?
Oh, well, that was the book I mentioned at the very beginning of the show.
Oh, okay, because I actually do have one. I've been reading Why We Get Fat by I can't think of his name, Tobes. Instapundit has linked to it a couple of times. And to me, this is the definitive example. You see a reference to a book, you go to Amazon, it's like, wow, that does sound interesting. I could have it in 2 days. Oh, no, I can have it right now, right? I put it on my iPhone. And it's like by the time it would have arrived at my house on two-day order, which is incredibly fast to turn around, I've already read it, right? I mean, it's like I've already, you know, even in the compressed time that they could have delivered it to me, they can deliver it to me so much faster now on my Kindle app on my iPhone. I'm done with the book now in the time that it would have taken to get it on an accelerated pace. You know, I mean, that's just it. That's the world we live in.
I'm laughing about something Sally wrote here. She's suggesting that the reason we get fat is we won't get off our butts to go to the bookstore to buy the book. You know.
Okay, we're going to have to do a show about this because that's completely wrong. Okay, Sally? That's not it at all. Okay, well, I know we're getting close on the time, Stephen, so what's our music for tonight?
Mary is the name of the song, Mary by The Risk.
The Risk singing Mary. Okay, well, thanks for putting that together, Stephen. Great talking with you. As always, thanks, Chatters. Terrific chat going on this evening. Everyone listening live and everyone listening to us via MP3. Thanks for being part of Fast Forward Radio. We're back on Saturday with another edition of The World Transformed, back on Monday with another dip into the archives, and back on live again this time next week. So until next time, live to see it.